All right, guys. American Now, Scott Stevens, Barb Adams, along with you on the phone. Dr. Judy Wood, we've been discussing 9/11 in a very different light. You know, not so much on the planes and where the people are, but more in the observational effects in the debris of 9/11. What we found, or what Dr. Judy Wood noticed on the ground afterwards, and how the day unfolded, led her to come to the conclusion that some directed energy weapon was at play here. And I'm wondering that if they so effectively brought down, you know, a pair of towers on cue, what else can they do? What other kind of weapon are they playing with? Have they used it elsewhere? I mean, WTF is going on, you know? It's crazy. Thanks for joining us this evening, Dr. Wood.
Thanks. And talking about, you know, with accuracy, Building 7 is phenomenal. It didn't even spill across the street. If you look at the east face of Building 7, it faced the post office. It didn't even, you know, cover the sidewalk. It didn't cover the last lane of traffic.
Wow.
It's 47 stories tall. Each floor is the size of a football field. Yet it didn't spill across the street.
So
and it
not
didn't
even
make a bunch of noise when it, quote, slammed to the ground. It had a whisper quiet descent.
Well, because we're familiar with the video with the cutter explosions that ran across the building, and it looked like it, there was like a 70-30 split, and it began to just literally, it was cut. It was like this invisible guillotine just boom, popped it. But yet you're saying that even that didn't pancake properly.
Oh, there wasn't a pancake. The seismic impact from whatever did land on the ground was hardly noticeable above background noise. In other words, it was like a jackhammer.
Wow.
You know, it should have been like raining dump trucks.
It should have been. Should have been. And, well, I guess that makes cleanup a whole lot easier.
Yeah. Just covered with mud. It turned into a pile of mud. it's pretty amazing.
Would you want to speak to the jumper issue?
Sure.
I mean, well, that was kind of a horrific scene, and not something that that was really got a whole lot of airplay. But that was a significant thing in the early part of that morning. What were the jumpers?
And how little it gets talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I've looked carefully at some of the jumpers, and there's one that I really relate to a lot. And it's difficult thinking about it and looking at it, but then I realized these people want their stories told. You know, you put yourself in their position, they don't want to just be forgotten.
You're telling me some of them lived?
No.
No.
Oh.
I'm like,
are you kidding me? Somebody survived this?
No, Scott, they didn't live, but they still want their stories told.
People can survive such a jump. It's not impossible. But, I don't think that was the issue here. There's something else going on. But imagine if you were one of those people. Wouldn't you want your story told?
Oh, definitely.
And so I feel like I've made them a promise. And once I did that, then I couldn't look away. But before doing that, it's such an uncomfortable thing to think about. And there's one particular fellow that really struck me. He's hanging from the 105th floor by one hand and one foot, taking his pants off. He's already got his shirt off. Now he's taking his pants off. Why would it be so important to take the pants off?
Do you think they just felt like they were burning to him?
Well, usually, if it was a fire, pants would be a protective layer.
You would think so.
And, firefighters don't go in without their clothes on to be cooler.
Right, right. So is it possible then there was some kind of effect on the mind that was causing him to behave in such a way? Or?
We look up and down that floor, and the floor is below it, and you see a lot of people without their shirts on and so forth. And then think about if you were inside in such an environment, with fire, what I would do is go to the bathroom and get my clothes wet.
Mm-hmm.
Get whatever extra clothing wet, wrap it around your head, and then make a run for it.
Yeah.
So you'd be wet. If the fire sprinklers went off, you'd be wet. If they didn't go off and it was hot there, you'd be wet from sweat. Any which way you look at it, chances are these people are wet. They have wet clothing. And why would they be outside the building taking their clothes off? If, for whatever reason, you know, this guy needed to get his pants off, heck, hold your breath, duck in, take the pants off, and then step back out. You know, if there's smoke or whatever, you know, why can't they hold their breath? The temperature isn't going to be that big a difference.
No, you wouldn't think so.
Obviously, this guy wants to live, because otherwise he would have jumped already. He wouldn't be taking his pants off in order to jump.
Well,
so there's a reason why he's taking his pants off. Then you start to think about it. There's different kind of energy fields that affect wet clothing more than dry clothing, more than dry skin.
Because we talked about the effect of paper and water in a microwave.
Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, inside your microwave oven, you have that, like, metal grill that keeps the beams bouncing around inside the oven.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think of that, you know, the cage, so to speak, of the tower, keeping some sort of energy field within the building.
And so he wanted to get outside of that cage. And get
the wet clothing off.
And interesting. So dangling off the side of the building was preferable to being inside the building, whether it was on fire on his floor or not.
Correct. That's the only conclusion I could come to.
I'm glad I was not there that day.
It's horrible, but, you know, if he's left us that information in that photograph.
By his behavior. Yeah.
Yes.
Is that on your Cliff Notes page, or do you have those photographs?
That picture isn't up there yet, but it will be.
Okay. Are you still getting photographs and images being sent to you that you can dissect?
I've been collecting other photos. They get more gruesome, too, of, like, body parts.
Yeah.
Mm. And that issue. And that is very revealing, too. How do you get body parts 300 feet from the building? People can't jump that far.
No, not even with that breeze.
Right. That lends another question. Oh. Also, when people land, you know, they...
Splatter.
They should be somewhat together. Like, you know, roadkill, when you hit a deer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
The deer is kind of in one piece. It may be broken up, but it's in one piece.
Yes.
You don't have a toenail here, a finger there. You know, an arm over here.
And these are just spread out body parts.
And that's what you're finding is bits and pieces.
And skin.
And skin?
Actually, intact skin?
Yes. The street is littered with skin.
Oh, my goodness.
We have something here that's very different that's going on.
Very different.
And testimony of people exploding.
Yeah. Well, we all know what happens when you're not supposed to put the cat in the microwave or the marshmallow. Yeah, that they come from the inside out. All right, Little America taking us to the break. Dr. Judy Wood will continue. DrJudyWood.com if you want to follow along. Stay with us. America Now.
Tell me how long you gonna stay.
The GCN Radio Network. Providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
What can you do for me, Barb?
Well, I could probably do a lot of things, but but tonight I'm going to try to do something and get some truth out of it. Get some truth about 9/11 out here with Dr. Judy Wood.
Well, apparently the powers that be and whatever play our government has used taxpayer dollars, and they've developed a whole nother weapons portfolio. And whether the platform is aircraft or space-based or land-based, I would probably say it's all of the above. And we've got, we're still investing in old technology and old conventional weapons. To me, seems like an incredible waste of money when we apparently have this freaking powerful space beam.
Star Wars directed energy weapons.
And they're operational. And it seems like a ludicrous waste of money to fund and build and play Army the way we're playing Army in this day and age. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Wood, and let me rant a bit.
Well, thanks. Let me clarify something about the term space beams. I'm not saying where it came from or even who is operating it.
Well, right. I have a guy at Honeywell who says we've got him, so there you go.
Okay. I think there's a lot of different types of weapons, and the reason why I call it DEW, directed energy weapons, mm-hmm. it involves energy, it's directed, and was used mm-hmm. as a weapon.
Yeah. Right, right.
And it's not necessarily the conventional, like, you know, laser beams or, you know, laser pointers.
Right.
It's an energy field. It's like what John Hutchison uses, except he doesn't use it as a weapon, so it can't be the same thing. But an energy field, and intersect that with other types of energy, which might provide the directional control within a larger field.
Is that why Hurricane Aaron is important?
I believe so.
Could you enlighten me on that a little bit, how it works?
I was noticing the plume coming up from the site. I wanted to get a better idea about it. It's actually, I saw black fumes go westward and white fumes go up and southward. So obviously it wasn't totally controlled by wind. There's okay. something else going on there.
Okay.
So that's kind of weird. The black stuff goes west and the white stuff goes south and up. And I thought, let me get a better view of this from satellite image. And so I went looking for weather satellite pictures. And then, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, what's this? It looks like a hurricane. And I went to looking into it more. It's Hurricane Aaron that was headed straight for New York City for the 4 days prior to 9/11. It was a hurricane ever since, I think, the 1st of September. But it went directly, a beeline, right to New York City and stopped right outside of New York on the morning of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Turned around and started heading out that afternoon. So, gee, what was it doing there? Well, You talk to people with arthritis, and they can tell you when a storm is coming. They sense something. They sense the field effects. You get dry thunder ahead of a storm because the electrical field just ahead of like where the big pinwheel would be of a hurricane.
Okay.
So if you have this hurricane right off the shore, it can cause a field effect. Not necessarily right underneath the cloud cover, but beyond that. And at JFK Airport, LaGuardia, and Newark Airport, there was thunder reported on 9/11. So we have evidence of that field effect. So the whole area had that kind of effect. And then let's say you get a different type of energy field and intersect it with that. You would get effects that have happened in a specific location.
So they didn't need to get Aaron any closer to New York City than apparently they did. And when it was done, they could release that storm to go off in whatever direction it would more naturally take.
Mm-hmm. And, there was a cold front that was coming across the U.S., and maybe, I don't know how they control things.
Right.
But what tells me that this was controlled was that there was no concern about how long that storm was going to stall out there. And here we have, Manhattan is not built for hurricane season.
Oh, no.
And it's right at sea level. And if there's a storm, a big hurricane that's looming right outside of town, you should be concerned how long it's going to be there because of the storm surges, and start evacuating people.
You'd think so.
Well, but, I mean, they know. I mean, they knew with Katrina. They knew with Hugo. Mm-hmm. They knew. They've known about the effects and field effects of hurricanes for, I bet, upwards of 50 years. I mean, this is research has been done and been tested and been experimented with. And, you know, that's a whole nother show. That's a whole nother show.
What I started looking at is the structure of a hurricane. It looks very much like a Tesla coil, like a big supersized Tesla coil.
Yep.
And also tornadoes. There's something that's in common with those. And I think everyone's heard of cars sitting on telephone poles or on fences.
Right. In the wake of a tornado.
Right.
But if you look at some of these pictures, the car didn't tumble in that position. It clearly was lifted up and then gently set down wherever it was set down.
Right,
a type of levitation.
Well, we're directly back to the Hutchison effect, and if you're not familiar with that, just Google Hutchison effect, and he's got YouTube videos and some amazing work, and Barb and I have done a show with him on another project we participated in, and his work, and he's had his lab picked up and confiscated more than once by U.S. and Canadian authorities, so they're aware of his work, and you should be too. Not you, Dr. Wood.
We all should be.
Listeners.
Because this moves our physics and our understanding of physics into the next century. And if we don't educate ourselves about these topics and what they can be used for, then these yahoos can pull off a 9/11 again. And we still turn our eye and we don't see it. And it's just, it's really a pet peeve of mine that people are blind by their own choosing, and I really struggle with choosing to remain dumb.
And I think that Nikola Tesla, knew about this technology, 100 years ago, but was afraid it would be used for evil purposes, so it didn't bring it out for good purposes. But we already know it's being used for evil purposes, so why don't we use it for good purposes?
Well, and that's not going to change.
Some free energy.
Well, it's not going to change until the people's understanding of this comes about. And when I think the truth about 9/11 is known and understood far and wide, they're not going to be able to get away with this again. And that can't change until the consciousness changes and people's desire for information. There's a little break coming up as we move into the bottom of the hour. And I know we don't want to bring you down, but it's to lift you up eventually. That's where we got to go. All right, we'll continue the last half hour with Dr. Judy Wood on America Now. Stick with us, folks. We're kind of hoping that sooner than they think, we're going to figure out this game and that concerted effort to ferret out the yahoos behind the curtain and what they're doing. And I suppose it really becomes more about their agenda and all that they use to scoop up legally. That whole 8 years with Bush Cheney was about gathering up power. And I can't believe they handed it off to Obama. I'm like, just something.
Something's just not quite right still.
I'm really surprised he's still in office or even got to office, by the way, by the effects of their past behavior. Just anyway, we're talking about field effects with Dr. Judy Wood and drjudywood.com and how Hurricane Aaron, the field around that hurricane could have been used as one of the fields that they could have interfered with.
As a Tesla coil, basically, coil. I think.
And as you go to the Cliff Notes page on drjudywood.com, down below as we get into probably three quarters of the way down, you can begin to see some of the other Hutchison effects when you see 2x4s driven through palm trees from Hurricane Andrew, plywood driven through. And there's been all this talk, at least me as a storm chaser and in atmospherics, that how you get these odd objects embedded in seemingly impenetrable things. Mm-hmm. And maybe inside these rotating vortexes that you get a demolecularization and you can slip in a foreign object.
Things turned, John Hutchison describes them as turning to jelly.
Yeah. But they don't seem to come apart in a way like the metal, the rusting. You don't get that with a tornado, though.
You get things coming apart somewhat. Some that look inexplicable.
Yeah, you do.
But we try to force things into what we think they're supposed to be instead of observing what really is. Like the deal with straw in trees.
Right.
There's a Russian scientist in this article on my website where he did the mathematics behind it. It's the same type of thing where the straw is actually kind of dissolved into the tree.
So he basically took a cross-section of the tree to see what the integrity of the straw was, and it wasn't intact, like you say.
Straw is intact, and the wood, it's just embedded in it, both merged together.
Molecular bonding.
Yeah.
So in looking at the World Trade Centers and a lot of the beams that did remain, they were bent in a very unusual way, which means the metal had to turn soft, did it not?
Exactly. I call that the rolled-up carpet look. The outer columns were in groups of three. There's prefabricated units of three columns, three stories tall. I call those wheat checks. And if the building collapsed from too much force mashing down on it, those should buckle outward and rotate around a horizontal axis, like bend over.
Right.
Instead, they curled around a vertical axis.
Which that doesn't make any sense, that phenomenon.
There's no force that way.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. It would.
So they curled up kind of like a ribbon curls up. When you etch one side of a ribbon, it curls.
Mm-hmm.
And these beams kind of look like that, and they're, look like rolled up carpets. The beams, the columns, outer columns, are still straight as an arrow, but the spandrel plates are wrapped around them.
And that's just a Hutchison effect.
The curling, like John Hutchison has 2 and 3 inch diameter solid copper and molybdenum and aluminum beams. And they curl around and do strange things.
And wow. I suppose when you're in this field effect, it doesn't matter if it's a plumbing copper tube that's 1 or 2 inches in diameter or a 10-ton steel girder. It's going to bend the same.
Correct. And John Hutchison's beams were solid. They weren't tubing. They were solid.
Oh, it is solid copper, isn't it?
Yeah. And solid molybdenum.
That's amazing.
Solid materials. One of the ones that was another aha moment for me was that aluminum that split open. It's like it splits in layers. I had noticed in the vehicles, like the doors, which are not laminated, they're extruded, one big piece. They're peeled, like split thickness.
Oh, yeah. And yeah, they actually peel.
It looks just like John Hutchison samples, where his aluminum is just split through the thickness.
Well, and in this solid copper tube, usually when you would bend something, you're going to get a crinkling as the material collects at the point on the inner part of the bend. And there's not. It's smooth all the way around.
Exactly. Or signs that there's been some heating or gripping or something.
Something, yeah.
And there's no reason that a mechanical failure would cause a beam to bend more than 180 degrees.
Well, that's true, because it folds back onto itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it just curls around the smooth, like this big horseshoe-shaped beam from the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some really weird shapes, as well as dissolved-looking beams, Swiss cheese-looking.
You were a professor at a university, correct?
Mm-hmm.
How's that? How did that go for you? With me and the weather, it was obvious something was going on in the sky, that we were seeing field effects in the clouds. And obviously these are different strengths than what was used at the WTC. But, science and the mainstream just isn't ready to hear about this.
Someone once said it's like physics is not like science, it's a religion. And I think that's pretty mm-hmm. true.
That's true.
And that's how a lot of our academia has become, is just this religion that folks forget to look at simple logic and are afraid also to go out on their own to think. they go with the majority, feeling like they'll be safe. And maybe that's an instinct, an animal instinct, to go with the herd.
Well, to be safe in one sense of the word, but to be safe in another, to keep one's funding and to keep one's job, especially in academia.
Mm-hmm. But in herding, there's always a dog. There's always something keeping people rounded up and in the collective. And when you tend to wander away from the herd, they nip at your butt.
And so you got to be careful of what the truth really is. Is it with the herd or what's safe and what's not? And there's something my mom said to me when I started venturing off into this. She said, well, if you pursue this, you won't have a career. And my answer to her was, if I don't do this, nobody will have a career. There won't be a world.
Yeah. What a wonderful response. And thank you for stepping forward and doing this.
How's your mom? Is she behind you with this? Has she looked at it and go, you're doing great work?
She looked at it on day one when I called her up and was convinced at that moment. Because I thought it was another Orson Welles, War of the Worlds thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, except through TV set. And my mom lived near the Pentagon, so I thought, okay, she would know if we were being attacked because there should be fighter jets overhead. So I called her up and had her look out the window, and nope, no fighter jets. So she got skeptical along with me.
Wow. And then, the Pentagon, that's a whole other show. What happened there?
Right, but there's certain things you would expect to go as a theme. Like if we were being attacked, wouldn't you expect to see some action in the skies?
Well, yeah, rather than just
so.
I agree. Yeah, it was
made sense.
It was a psychotic day. All right, last segment with Dr. Judy Wood coming up. Little rest and development taking us to the break. America Now continues. Dr. Judy Wood on the line with us as we discuss 9/11 and the. Really the horror that was brought down on New York City on that particular day. And still,
on all of America.
Well, it's a stain on this nation's history. It's just a stain on our past, and it doesn't need to be there, and it needs to be exposed to the light of day. And all of this has got to be brought out so we can move through it, so we can put the 9/11 truth movement to bed and be done with this and get on to the future of this country. And until there's a truth about all of these conspiracies, and there's not just one.
Oh, no.
It's just one after the other, after the bloody other, and we've got to get to the other side of this crap that they put on us for years and years and years. And until that happens, we're not going to be able to build a new future and hope and change.
And shift this consciousness into something better.
We've got to take out the trash. And I'd gotten an email, Dr. Wood, earlier in the week about Fraud Enforcement Recovery Act, and that you're involved in a case. Can you say a little bit about that? I mean, you don't have to get into the specifics, but just kind of what's happening.
Yes, I can say a little bit about it. I have uploaded to my website some of the recent documents that were submitted and some of the activities that have taken place. This was a case that I filed over 2 years ago. It was in April 2007, involving the Data Quality Act and in the False Claims Act. And it came to light and was dismissed in a lower court and appealed to a higher court. And they just heard the arguments, oral arguments, this past week on that. And the documents that were submitted for that are on my website. But what was interesting is after this oral arguments date was set, the law changed.
Oh, great.
It changed retroactively. That was surprising.
Oh,
it changed
no.
retroactively back to any case that was pending as of May 7th, 2008, which my case was. And
that
so
figures.
That's becomes quite interesting. The history of this this new law, the FERA law, is also posted on my KETAM page. So if folks would like to look at it and download the documents, they can.
Well, because I'm looking at fraud enforcement recovery. You know, if there was ever a fraud, this is one.
This is the big, probably the premier one.
And it just retroactively, it's just so convenient. That's just so convenient.
I love the way they can just go ahead and change the laws as they need them.
Well, is this a...
But it's to our benefit, greatly to our benefit.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's what they say. Yeah.
That's the amazing part of it.
That's the standard line they keep feeding us.
What good is a government that lies to you? I mean, what purpose can they serve? And if they lie about this, are they truthful about?
This is our government, and we have to. It's our government, and it's not, you know, Big Brother taking care of us. And if we want it to be our government, we need to be involved. And a lot of folks said, you know, about pursuing a case that, well, you know, you won't get a fair shake and blah, blah, blah. Well, how do you know until you use it? You know, use it or lose it. And I want this country to survive. So I want to have faith in this country and give it every last chance it can to do what it's supposed to do.
But without the participation of the people... In an honorable way, it can't survive, because then it is left alone to those who want power so badly that they'll do anything to protect that power grab. And it just it lies in the people's hand. And I'm sorry, I hate to say this, but the people get exactly the government that they deserve, and they deserve what they've got. Because we've let it go for so long without being responsible or demanding responsibility and accountability from those 535 idiots in Congress.
Well, it seems like things are, you know, maybe hopefully swinging back the other way.
I think they are. I would tend to agree with you that one, Dr. Wood. I think we are trying to take back the power that we've let go. We've allowed this to happen to ourselves. And it's about time that we step up to the plate and say we are responsible and we take that power back.
Well, and there's got to be, if there's any issue other than maybe the Federal Reserve and 9/11 that both parties can agree upon, it would be these two issues.
Yeah.
And, audits and 9/11 truth commissions and...
But again, look who gets to choose the people who are doing the auditing and on the commissions.
Well,
we need to have ourselves on these auditing committees and on the commissions, we're getting off.
My case is one about science fraud. Mm-hmm. And that's what has gone on is...
In relationship to NIST?
Yes. You know, I asked in one of my documents, what happens when a high school student asks his teacher, how come when I hit my baseball through the window, it makes this spider web starburst pattern? Mm-hmm. And these windows here, across from the World Trade Center, are round, you know, round holes in them.
Yeah, you know? and along those same lines, wasn't there something to do with the marble on one of the buildings? I mean, it basically just kind of
crumbled.
Yeah, it was gone.
And the marble in the lobbies crumbled. There's really some fascinating testimony that can be read through all of this. That just it needs to be looked into. It needs an explanation. Like people exploding in midair.
Yeah.
Before they hit the ground.
And I would guess that these beams can be tuned for either broad spectrum or narrow spectrum and the target material that they're looking at.
Or all materials within a certain range. Because what we're left with is, you know, the edge of the effects is why some, like, vehicles were affected and others were not. But the first responder testimony is just, it's right there, all the information needed. One of the particular comments that I found interesting was this firefighter who went to put out some car fires and found that the water had no effect on these fires.
Oh.
And weren't there evidences of paper being right next to a lot of those cars that were on fire, and yet the papers were not burning?
Yeah, there's plenty of
pictures. So what was that, real fire or what? And it turns out another aspect of the Hutchison effect is luminescence without heat.
Interesting.
And you've got pictures of that smoke rising without fire, and it was luminescing. Well, we got to wrap this up, Dr. Wood. We got to wrap this up. And
so much more we could go into.
One other thing I would like to mention is often, which is mistaken, is the sound of explosions that folks often quote. If you have pressurized tanks, air tanks, and they're beginning to dissolve, what's going to happen? They're going to explode.
They're going to pop.
Explosion.
That doesn't mean that there's a bomb in the building. Just like when you put a raw egg in your microwave oven, you hear an explosion happen in there.
Oh,
doesn't
you certainly
do. Doesn't mean the TNT was in that egg.
Wow.
So you hear explosions, but that's because of pressurized tanks.
Amazing.
And at ground level, the Scott Packs, the air tanks the firefighters wear, quite a few firefighters were noting they're just exploding, the extra ones in the fire trucks.
Wow.
I'm just getting email pictures of two pictures of this Air France 447 flight that blew up or came apart in midair. And, it's a crazy
another
world
show.
We live in. All right, Dr. Wood, thank you so much for joining us on America Now and talking about your research.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. We'll do it next time and involve the listeners a little more and let them ask some questions. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. 4th of July is next Saturday. And we'll see. We may or may not be here on Saturday.